This is Josh Pierre
with and Made it's Geronimo, Look. Bitch.
We are the group, part of Made You Look. Thanks for joining us. Just starting this podcast. This is something that's like, I guess, between me and G, pretty much just our DM chat for the most part, staying in the intersection between sports and fashion, something that is probably the core of our friendship and that what kind of made us friends. So we thought we'd speak about a little bit more from our perspective. I am actually a fashion designer, menswear brand for about 7 years. Worked in freelance in New York for about 7 years. I worked in retail, worked design, did branding, everything in between. So also played ball for DePaul for 2.5 years. So these are two areas that mean a lot to me. G, what up?
I am a fashion enthusiast, style connoisseur by hobby, musician by trade, and overall lover of culture. Also have a extensive background in basketball, played a little college basketball, and met Josh during his tenure during college basketball, and I think that kind of just birthed our friendship and our kindred love for style and aesthetics. So let's
get into it.
Let's get into it.
Let's bring them into our world in this special space that we kind of generate a lot. We're gonna start off with what we're gonna kick it off with. I guess we'll just go off of what we were just talking about, the Thom Browne show, haute couture, Thom Browne's first art couture presentation in Paris happened earlier this week, marking his 20th anniversary. Big deal. I think it's dope because one thing, you don't see menswear designers turning into art couture fashion houses. Like, I don't know any other brand that's went from menswear, an area that was like looked down upon and not as popular as it is now, to flipping the script to becoming a haute couture fashion house. That's crazy to me. That's almost like what Andre Wiggins almost deciding he wants to be an MVP player and being like he's taking over Steph Curry's team. That's kind of almost what it's like.
But you explain to people like are not as well versed in fashion and like all the nuances of it, because you just educated me. Like, explain to them what the difference between couture, like what is couture? What is, you know, what's hot couture? What's couture? What's ready to wear? Like, what are the differences between, because I feel like a lot of people feel like they know fashion and because they wear designer. But as you have educated me, like there's levels to what would be considered fashion, and there's like a diffusion progression as you like filter that to the masses. So if you could, like, explain for the audience, like, because I didn't know either, like, what is couture? Like, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
What's the difference between that and, like, something you see on the runway?
Yeah. Well, haute couture is pretty much a division of a fashion house that has specially made garments, and they are made anywhere between like 80 hours for a dress to act hand sewn. Everything is done by hand. Everything is specially assembled, carefully assembled, almost to like the point of like you have to wear gloves for every single thing that has to happen with this piece. And in order to be considered a haute couture fashion house or to be able to show during this week, you have to go through the Federation of the Chambre Syndicale de la Haute Couture. They are the commission house. They are the authority board on who controls that can show and who cannot show. It is a hard thing to kind of like, you can't just be like, oh, I'm going to turn haute couture. Like, you can't do that. There are different regulations and proof that you can't handle and you can do. Well, you have to have a freaking market that can afford these pieces. Most of them are for private clients with one or more fittings. There's a special workshop and atelier in Paris that employs like 15 members of the staff, 20 technical people at a time. And most of the presentations have 50 original looks. I mean, I'm saying, like, if you go to these houses and they're making a dress, it's literally like 20 people on one dress, just hands just fumbling around on one freaking dress. So it's definitely considered more art than anything. And then you have underneath haute couture is ready-to-wear, prêt-à-porter, and then you have, like, you know, ready-to-wear is the ones that you see everyone go to and that you see at the stores. That's more for the masses. And then you have, like, fast fashion and stuff like that, and that's even more for the masses.
Well, which would be, like, the ready-to-wear would be considered what? Like, is there a special name for that? Just ready-to-wear.
Prêt-à-porter.
Prêt-à-porter?
Yeah. Ready-to-wear, prêt-à-porter. Those are the ones that are more contemporary styles that we see most of the fashion shows do. Like, I don't know how many haute couture fashion houses, but, like, Balenciaga, Elsa Schiaparelli, Valentino, now Tom Brown. I'm missing out a few who are pretty amazing off the top of my head, but those are the ones that are like, oh, Jean-Paul Gaultier, Maison Margiela, I think does an haute couture line. Yeah, they definitely do. And I can't remember, there's a few others that are really dope, but it's definitely the more of an elitist class that's a part of this. And it's the beauty side of fashion. I think that's what, and I think more of it is going to go back to that side because fashion has generated this type of large energy, and people in this industry do like the exclusiveness about it. And this part of fashion still has a high level of exclusiveness to it. So, like, the inclusivity about it is still smoky, still smoke around it.
So it's not inclusive, is what you're saying?
Nah, they trying to. Like, with Cardi B pulling up to haute couture, that's a flex, you know? That's a bit of a flex. Not every celebrity's getting asked to come to the haute couture shows.
So what do you have to do to qualify to be, like, invited to a haute couture show? Would that be, that's a level up from, like, Fashion Week, right?
Yeah. I mean, one is to be a client, to be able to afford these $100,000 dresses or stuff, like, to be a special client.
Right, which she has the ability to do. But
she has the ability to do it. Right. You know, Dolce & Gabbana has haute couture as well, and they also do an Ultimoda?
Who does?
Dolce & Gabbana.
Okay.
I think they do, like, another version for menswear, too. I think it's called Ultimoda or something like that, or Ultramoda. But they do one also. But yeah, to be a special client, to be a friend of the house, I'm sure Cardi B has a special relationship with all these houses, the way she can go to all of them. And, you know, if you are a fan of it, you know, Kanye West used to go to them. But yeah, it's definitely like you either a client and you going, or you are a high level stylist and you're looking for your client for the red carpet season. And if you just really rich and you got that guap.
So it's basically a pay to play or a status level type of entry thing.
Oh yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Gotcha.
But this is like, you know, this is a lot of designers' dreams to get to this point. This is like you're playing in the Super Bowl every year at this point.
So this is like the elites of the elites.
Yeah.
These pieces aren't constructed to be, everything is one of one, right?
You're wearing it once, no more than twice, and you're putting it back in the bag, and it's going to a museum in 15 years, or you're like, you're just storing it for yourself because you can.
Gotcha.
You know? It's definitely like, you know, it's like buying art for the most part. It's part of your collection, and I'm sure museums will ask for a haute couture piece if they're doing an exhibition on a special designer to show in that museum. You know, they're treated like that. These are art, you know?
So back in the 80s, like, would you consider those pieces like, or those looks that Michael Jackson used to have put together, would those be considered couture?
like the leather jackets and the sequin pants and stuff?
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know. I don't know how much level of labor was put into them.
So I had, there's a threshold of level of labor.
I mean, if it's all hand did, like if they're hand making the stuff, yeah, it could be considered haute couture. That's the thing, like haute couture, all these things are handmade. Like they're doing it by their hands. Like not a lot of machinery is going into these things. You know, if they apply like a special texture to a special butterfly that was handmade or origami made by this special paper and hand sewn onto the dress, and there was like 200 of those butterflies on the dress. And let's just say for each butterfly, it takes, what, an hour to make it. That's 500 hours to put on a dress, butterflies on a dress that were hand-folded. Like,
right.
That type of labor is unheard of.
So I'm reading here, it's saying the difference between couture and haute couture. Couture is any fashion piece that is handmade and one of a kind. However, haute couture is high fashion clothing, or known as high dressmaking haute. Fashion houses regulated by the French government. So the French government is this, that's that commission you talking about.
Yeah.
The government is involved in fashion.
Yeah. Which in Europe, most of the time, the Italian government are part of Italian fashion as well. They have a commission board that controls it also. You got to think in Europe, fashion is like part of a big part of the economic system.
So it has to be regulated by what? A board of what? Experts?
Experts, teachers, different experts has been, I mean, I've never actually looked at the people who are part of the board, but I'm sure they've been in the industry for an extensive amount of time.
That's dope.
But it's special. And I'm saying, but I think it is special for Tom Brown, back to that point, is because you don't see menswear designers who started off in menswear go to haute couture. Like, that's...
So, haute couture is more for, it's really for, like, women.
Yeah.
There is no men's haute couture.
No, not technically not. I mean, there's men's styles included, like Chanel does. Like I say, Dolce & Gabbana has a level, but nah. The thing is, like, menswear has a limitation of, like, you know, you can't get as imaginative in another world with stuff as much as you can with women in dresses. One is because not a lot of men will pay that much for that type of stuff. And two, it's just, you know, how many more, I guess you can do it with suits. And that is the main core of what people will probably work with for haute couture for men. But it's, I still think there's limitations around that.
Gotcha.
But yeah, I think it was really cool. What'd you think of the show?
It seems extremely avant-garde. Like a lot of this stuff is hard for me to digest because it's like so unique. It's really abstract. It's hard. It's like, I'm trying to figure out like the inspiration behind it. It's like so unique. It's like above my taste level for right now.
Above your taste
level. So I'm kind of feel like, you know how like you go to a fine art, whatever, and like you're observing the art, but then you're kind of like, I don't know if I'm able to like really appreciate what's happening right now.
Yeah. A lot of Tom Brown shows are close to performance art. Like, yeah. That's what he does. And I think that's why it was a natural progression for him to do this, is because he creates a fucking show. Like, it's not just models going down to special song or anything. Like, he has performers in his shows. He has extensive amount of set design and taking people to another world, and you know, that's his thing. So like for him to do this, it doesn't seem inauthentic. You know, for another brand that would, you know, you could tell another brand if they did this would be like, that's random. But for Tom Brown, it makes perfect sense. One, he's always made high level suits for 20 years now, and for him to do this, I feel like it's an amazing challenge. I mean, I think also back to the performance part, he had the pigeon. You know, you can start off there. That's like something from a theater or like Broadway, I thought was really cool. And they had it in some type of theater. I don't know if it was the theater, the opera theater in Paris or not, but they had him sitting on the stage instead of the audience, which I thought that was an interesting place to put him at. So it made them feel part of the show.
Wait, so the audience is sitting on the stage?
Yeah. Like, if you notice, those little, all those gray things that are in the background,
yeah,
that's the seats. That's where, like, the audience would sit at if you were watching a performance on the stage. But the people that are watching the show, they're on the stage with, like, those models, you know? If I'm making
that's crazy.
It looks like they put them in a pit or something like that.
So it's like the audience is part of the show.
Yeah, yeah.
I do like this pigeon look, though. It's really, it's androgynous, but also, like, I don't know. I don't know what to call it. It's crazy.
The pigeon was hard. The pigeon was hard. I mean, I didn't know it was a pigeon, but I was like, huh, it's very interesting work. It's very
and to make a jacket into a skirt.
Yeah. Had a pan, had pockets to it too. It's all great. Like, that's the thing. Like, he did it masterfully, man. He stayed true to his colors. He still challenged the work. He brought some performance in it. I thought it was amazingly done.
And right, and you only see, like, only one person gets these looks.
Oh yeah.
Now, are they able to break up the look? Like, let's say, like, for the pigeon, for example, be like, all he wants a pigeon head, I don't want the whole thing. They're gonna say no.
I don't know. It depends on, like, if the designer wants to be broken up or not. Mm. And that person will have to pay more if they break it up, which, I mean, these people have this indispensable amount of money. Like, that's nothing.
Right. I feel like at this point, for these people, like, money is not even indispensable. Money's not the object.
Yeah. So it's like, all right, whatever. I'll pay the extra $10K.
Right. Whoa.
Yeah. But let's get off this highbrow shit and let's go to, like, some more lowbrow talk. I guess things we've been feeling. I think, you know, there's the crop sweatshirt, whatever trend that's going around on TikTok that I think, are we in favor of, or are we kind of like whatever?
I mean, I feel like I've been doing that. It's hard for me to, like, hop on these trends when I just feel like I could say this honestly. It's like, this is like shit that's duh. Like, we've been doing this for a long time. Like, I've been cutting the bottom off of my shirt because they were too long. For at least as long as I've been in LA. So at least 7 years.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
I've been cutting my sleeves shorter. Like, cropping my shirts. Like, not showing my mid. Like, I'm not making it into a halter top or like a midriff. But I'm still like cropping it. So it's like a shorter shirt.
Yeah, I never did that, actually. I just always cut my sleeves. I've been on that. I mean, obviously, since hooping days, you always cut your sleeves off. I guess everybody have. But, I mean, I would wear my, like, I remember I had this old school Orchard Street shirt, and I cut the sleeves off of it, and it became a whole nother shirt. So I always did that. But the crop thing is interesting. I'm not mad at it. I mean, I don't think it's, like, that crazy to do, but I think it is something that, like, if you don't want to pay for a lot of money for a shirt that's shorter, you could do yourself, and it looks completely different than what it was before.
Well, most people probably don't even know if you find a tailor you actually like, they can crop your shirt for you and give you a hem. Like, even a single stitch, depending on, like, how good the tailor is.
Like a cleaner look for it?
Yeah. Like, most people don't realize, like, you need to find, if you're going to even step into the realm of, like, wanting to have a extensive wardrobe of that like covers like function and form, you need to have a person you go to that like understands like
get a tailor people. That is
you need
a
tailor people. You have to have tailor people.
You need to have a tailor. Like get a good tailor.
Every adult needs a tailor for sure.
Every adult, every human needs a tailor.
That's a fact.
Like it should be almost like a barber.
Yes.
That's the equivalent of it. You should almost, I'm not saying it's like a barber, but it's like one of those right underneath a barber that you're going to once a month. You go to the barber twice a month. You need to be going to a tailor like once a month. If you a style person and you buying a lot of clothes, you going to that. You going to your tailor at least twice a month. If you just starting to get into this world and you buying shit and you trying to figure out fits, you need to be going to them like once a month.
For sure. You absolutely do.
Yeah, like, yeah. And remember, if you're going through this, it's always better to buy something bigger than smaller. You can always get something tailored. You can
never. That's a fact.
Tailored if it's too small. So if you're ever in a decision on fits and you don't know, you're going through this baggy phase right now, it's good. But if things switch up, you want a little slimmer or more tapered, get it bigger. You know, or size up two more if you wanted a particular look, you know.
I agree. You always buy bigger.
Always buy bigger.
You can always get rid of the fabric, more fabric. You can never add, I mean, you can add fabric, but it's much harder, much more expensive. You taught me that.
Yeah.
That's true.
I mean, I think with the crop thing also, it looks better with like vintage wear. Like if you got like one of those, you got like an old sweatshirt from your high school days or college days and you don't know what to do with it and you like kind of were tired of it, you know, crop it. Cut the sleeves off of it.
Right.
You know, wear it with like some trousers and some boots and it'll be looking like on some collegiate rock star vibe, you know?
Yeah. Or
prep it out. I think that'd be cool.
I mean, it's all a matter of personal decision. I just feel like you need to... People need to understand, like, what their body type is. I feel like people who have shorter torsos probably would gain more from having the crop look. The crop look, as opposed to, like, I can see why you don't really crop your stuff because you have a longer torso, so it makes sense.
Nah, I'm opposite, man. My legs take up all my whole body. I got a short torso.
Oh, really?
Yeah, my legs take up 70% of my body. It feels like
I have a short torso too.
No, I mean the crop look. I like the crop looks look good to me because I got long legs, so I can insinuate my legs more. It makes me look taller.
The crop look makes you look taller.
Yeah. Yeah. I like the look, and I like what the fashion boys are doing on TikTok with it. They grunging it up. You know, they styling it, look like a date night type of vibe, the bandana on the neck. You know, I like it, you know? I just, you know, it's funny how things evolve and come back around.
Yeah, I think it's funny. It's cool, though. I'm not mad at it. I'm just like, all right, I get it. I've been doing this, but I get it.
Do you feel like you're going to have to do something new to kind of stay ahead of boys?
Absolutely. I feel like I'm like perpetually on the pursuit of like trying to discover what's new. Trying to be like still myself, but like a little edgy. Like a little, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I'm trying to make myself be stay a little uncomfortable.
Yeah. I think like stepping out of your own box. I think more experimentation is going to have to happen, but it's only like, you're only like doing it with yourself. Like you're only challenging yourself because you know the limits, which you can step out of and what you can't step out of. Like, I guess the most, like I stepped out the box a lot for this gala when I did this black look with a bunch of pearls. I did that and that was different, but that wasn't like, it wouldn't be surprised if I wore it because it was still kind of a tunic, still black. I wear a lot of black. I wear a lot of tunics, blah, blah, blah. And I wore Jordans with it. So it's still like a balance that for me.
It's definitely a balance of like, and you know what I struggle with a lot too is like knowing when to let go of some shit in my closet, because there's like that little like, there's that gray area where you're like, if I get rid of this, like, will I ever, do I see this shit coming back around? Like, not even like being fashionable, but like, do I see myself being interested in this type of aesthetic ever again? It challenges me to be like, make really good decisions about like what to let
go. Hoarding clothes is such a thing. That is a real problem.
I'm having a problem right now because I'm liquidating my closet, like with all like a lot of fast fashion, a lot of like early streetwear stuff, like a lot of early BBC shit.
Bro, like, editing is difficult.
It's hard. It's so hard.
Moving makes you edit your closet a lot. And I've had to move a lot. And that forces you to edit a lot. Like, man, I'm just now getting rid of some shirts that I had at DePaul like 10 years ago. I'm like, all right, it's time for me to break away from it.
Right. Yeah. Because you're like, this was like a different season in my life. I was like, I'm too attached to like what it meant to me.
Also, it kind of reminds you of that time when you had it and you think about like, oh, man, that was some good times in that, or like, you know.
There's like sentiment to it. Like there's nostalgia to it.
Right. It adds that layer to it, and which is one of the reasons why you don't want to get rid of it. It's annoying because clothes take up a lot of space.
They do.
They take up a lot of space.